What is up? Welcome to another edition of the Utilization Report Debrief. I'm Marcus Grant, joined by Dwayne McFarland. And Dwayne, glad you could make it here, because I know that you've had a busy morning. I know there's a whole lot of, you know, behind the scenes stuff that you're working on, but hopefully you've been able to clear your head and get yourself back on track to combine, free agency, all that kind of stuff. How are we feeling today?
Yeah, we're feeling good. It's all related to the rookies, which we're about to talk about with the combine stuff, but just getting all the data into the place that we need it to be able to run the models and everything. So we have some things that changed on the back end. So trying to make sure we've got all the right data components that we need to do the work that the people want, make sure we grade all the prospects and all that stuff. So yeah, like I said to you before, I was hammered this morning, but not as in drunk, as in, really working hard. You could have also say that I was cross-eyed, not from being drunk, but from staring at spreadsheets and QAing. Yep. Data is always fun, making sure that that you got all the games pulled in, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I think we're pretty much through that part though. Shout out James McCool. He's been awesome. He's been a major helper. He's a guy behind the scenes that helps us get all the data pulled and does all the math magic. So I think we're in a good spot. So we'll have one more test tomorrow, and I hopefully, fingers crossed, Marcus, we'll be ready to go.
As an old boss of mine used to say, it's watchmaking, right? Like, it's not exciting. It's not something that people, necessarily want to watch, but it's important to make sure all the pieces are in place to make sure this thing runs smoothly and on time. So we are going to dive into the combine, talk a little winners and losers, especially at a couple of the notable positions. Wide receivers put on a show over the weekend in Indianapolis, and talk about some of the running backs as well. And if we have time, we'll get to some tight end free agency, because that starts in exactly a week, actually. Is when the new free agent year begins. So depending on how long we go, we may or may not get to tight ends, just throwing that out there. But let's start with a bit of news that hit on Monday. And I don't know if surprise is the right word. It felt like it was trending this direction, but the Denver Broncos have made the decision that they are going to release Russell Wilson, ending what has been a tumultuous 2 years with him as the starting quarterback. Year one with Nathaniel Hackett, I think you could say, was an outright disaster. Year two with Sean Payton was slightly better, but Dwayne, it became apparent, I think, early on that marriage was not really going to work out. So, in the short term, the Broncos have an opening at quarterback. They've moved on from Russell Wilson. Long term, though, there's a little bit of a financial hit that they are going to take. I mean, what was your reaction when you saw the move on Monday?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most surprising part about it, like you said, Marcus, I don't think it's necessarily surprising, but like, the Broncos have soured so much on this player, and I think rightfully so. Like, they're just going to release him and keep paying him a ton of money. Because they don't really have any other choice. Like, Russell Wilson could go play for a minimum contract somewhere else and still just be making a ton of money. Ian Hartis did a great job outlining everything about this whole situation this morning in the Fantasy Life newsletter. If you guys aren't subscribed, I don't know why. It is completely free, and you get great content like that in your inbox every morning from guys like Ian. So make sure you go check that out. But yeah, when you look at the dead cat pit and everything else, like, there was just no way around it. Like, they're going to have to take it on, but they decided that it was so bad that they're just willing to move on. And I think that I understand from the, player perspective, Marcus, like, I'd be interested in your thoughts, but I feel like the change in the NFL defense, along with, it's not always just one thing. Russell Wilson's also getting older, right? He's getting up there. But I think the big thing was the philosophical change from defenses in the NFL over the last 3 to 4 years, playing way more too high safeties. Even if they're not playing too high, their deepest defender in a cover three scenario is much deeper. And they're just not wanting to give up those big plays. And if you look at Russell Wilson, like, his MO has always been, it might not be there on an every play basis, just chain move, but he would eventually hit you with the big plays, that patented moon ball that would leave the top of your TV screen like a punt and then come right down perfectly into the breadbasket of a small receiver like Tyler Lockett, and like a 6'2 defender couldn't do anything about it. Like, Russell Wilson, the best quarterback I can ever remember, Marcus, at that pass. But now that pass is gone. The deep crossing routes aren't where they used to be. You can't just line up and say, hey, we're going to run. Then you guys are going to give a single man coverage on the outside, and I'm just going to throw it to the opposite side of whatever way the safety rotates. Like, you just don't get as many of those looks. They're still there, but you don't get as many. And typically when you are getting those looks now, it's like third and long. You're also having to face a blitz, right? So you don't get as long to get the ball away. So I feel like the strengths of Russell Wilson's game have been somewhat negated by the way that the NFL has changed. If you were watching him last year, you know, and I made myself stomach watching some complete games from Russell, and that's the best way to put it. Like, you had to stomach it. Now, I don't know that his receivers helped him all that much in Denver, Marcus. You know, I think probably more name value than actually quality of players there. But it wasn't good. Like, he was looking at his first read and just trying to tuck the ball and run. It was really bad.
Well, and you know, you talk about them, you know, him having the deep ball sort of taken away from him because of what defenses do. I think you throw in the fact that, yeah, at this point in his career, he's not the same runner that he was early on during his time in Seattle. So now you have taken away the two things that sort of made Russell Wilson special, and it is sort of a recipe for disaster. I'll tell you that I was wrong. I really thought that there was something left in the tank, and maybe there is, but I didn't think it would go as badly as it did in Denver. You know, the first year, okay, so you throw out the Nathaniel Hackett thing, and he got markedly better after that firing happened. And then I thought, okay, well, Sean Payton coming in, they're going to retool some things in the offense and figure out how to make it work. I mean, look, Payton made it work with a declining Drew Brees at the end of his time in New Orleans, that maybe he could do the same for Russ. But it was just apparent very early on that you know, these were two people who were just not going to mesh offensively. So this sort of felt like the only course of action. And now that the issue for the Broncos is going to be trying to work around that really nasty cap hit, while also trying to find a guy to come in and play quarterback for them for, you know, I don't know, the next couple of years. That's going to be interesting to find out what they do. You know, if they get somebody in the draft, if they try to maybe make a run at free agency, although I guess with the potential cap hit, I don't know how.
It feels like it's going to have to be the draft. You know, yeah. I don't see how they enter next year with Stidham. You know, Stidham showed a little bit at the end of the 2022 season for the Raiders. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but we've talked about this a little bit. I didn't necessarily think even at the end of the year that any of the skill position players would have been worse off with Stidham versus Russ, with just where Russ is at this point in his career with the way defense is playing. So
yeah,
I get moving on, but man, that's a lot of money to have to keep paying. So $35 million and $50 million on the Broncos cap in 24 and 25. That's insane, man.
And as I saw multiple people point out on Twitter, they moved on from him before his new contract even kicked in. You know,
I think it was Lindsay Rhodes that I first saw that tweet from. You know, she was like, they haven't even started paying like on the new contract yet.
Right. And he's already out of Denver. So going to be a really interesting time. Hold on, Broncos fans. We'll see how this thing goes. Let's ride. By the way, I did put out a poll, Super Scientific, obviously, on Twitter. There's about 34-35% of people who don't even believe he's going to be a starter anywhere next year.
I think there's a chance of that.
I think there's a chance of it. I think somebody will bring him in and give him the opportunity to start, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that Russ is a backup when the season starts next year. So for what it's worth. All right. Anyway, let's get to the combine, because that just wrapped up in Indianapolis for another year. You know, I know there's a lot of tweeting, a lot of talk about what happened there. Want to get into a couple of the positions, most notably the wide receivers, because there has been a ton of hype around this wide receiver class. Understandably, you start at the top with, you know, guys like Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, Romo Dunze, a couple of whom did not work out in Indianapolis. Yeah. But on the whole, Dwayne, this is a group that really put on a show, especially when you talk about the 40 times. But for you, when you're looking at these guys, especially when it comes to the combine, what sort of things matter to you? What are you paying attention to?
Yeah, I mean, I've researched this stuff for so long over the years, Marcus. And look, we love the combine. It's fun. We get our first real look at these prospects, you know, outside of, you know, obviously the best look you're getting is what they're putting on the film and their production that's already there. But I mean, getting to see them interacting with NFL types, and it's fun. It's kind of it's that kickoff to the season of, hey, let's look at all the prospects, right? But it honestly is the thing that matters the least. Draft capital is the most important thing. And then you've got their past production, which comes in. Now you've got to adjust that for their competition and things like that. And then you have athleticism. And there's a lot of great research out there on this. I've never actually taken the time to write up all my thoughts on this. Someday I probably should. But then I go read things from, like, Scott Barrett's already done a great job with this. Like, if you guys go to fantasypoints.com, you can check out how important is athleticism. Scott does a great job of writing this up, and it hits on most of the things that I've seen, and he actually comes up with some really cool stuff that I hadn't even researched before. Hayden Winks has done some write-ups on this type of thing. So you guys can go check out their work. But like here it is in a nutshell. We would prefer guys to be more athletic, but in the end, it does not really correlate strongly to scoring fantasy points at the next level, right? And we're talking like for tight ends, like their speed score, which is taking a combination, right, of their 40 time and their weight. Speed score really is the best thing that you can look at. And like for tight ends, like it's a 0.19 R squared value. Like we've talked here on previous podcasts about air yards year over year and how predictive it is for fantasy being like, you know, up at like, you know, the predictiveness of it year over year is like 0.5. And then how well it ties to fantasy points is like 0.7. So like, this is way lower than that, right? This is something that honestly, in a lot of fields, people would just say it's complete noise and they would ignore it. But we're living in a world where we've got this finite number of data points that we can really focus on. And the problem is if you squint too hard, you're going to make yourself think you found something, you know, because I think we've all been guilty of doing it. But I will say speed score is the thing, if you're going to look at one thing that correlates the most strongly to the next level of scoring fantasy points. And Scott, actually, in his article on how important is athleticism, he further breaks it down. And what I like about his work is he actually recalibrates, you know, for an overall athleticism score based on the things, even though they didn't matter a lot, that showed they mattered more than other things from a combine standpoint. And then he's got a cumulative score. He calls it SPORC. Yep. I think Hayden has something that he calls it's a little bit different. So like, I was like, I don't need to reinvent the wheel. These guys have already written this up. Like, so you guys can go check it out, but we'll mostly refer to the speed score stuff here. Now here's where it does matter, Marcus, you know, and I want your thoughts, but like, I think where it matters the most is how much do NFL teams care about it? Because right. If the NFL teams really care about it, it can push a player's draft stock up drastically. We've seen it multiple times. We saw it with John Ross back in the day. We're going to see it with Xavier Worthy. We'll talk about him out of Texas. He's probably a lock as a first round pick now, right? Just because of how fast he ran. So when that happens, you get more what? You get a longer leash and you get more playing time. Because guess what? That general manager and coach, they're now invested in you. They want to get you on the field. If you're a fifth round pick that runs a 4.35, guess what? It probably doesn't. It's not going to matter. right? But if that fast time moves you into a higher draft range, then now the team is more invested in you. And I think that's the thing that ultimately ends up mattering the most about the combine is how much does it improve or impact your draft stock in a negative manner.
Yeah, and I mean, I think your point about Xavier Worthy is well taken, because there was a lot of talk that after what he ran in Indy, that he was going to move up draft boards, and suddenly there were a lot more teams maybe picking a little higher up that were going to have an interest in him. We'll see what that means long term when he actually does get on an NFL field, but it's certainly something that keeps people interested. And look, and I don't know that NFL teams value speed quite the same way they used to. Not that they are ignoring it, but I mean, we always knew, right? Historically, the guy who ran the fastest 40 time, chances are Al Davis was going to draft him to the Raiders. I mean, that was just sort of a given. You just look down the list. You're like, okay,
Darius Hayward Bay, baby.
Exactly. You know, that's maybe the chief among them. You look down the list, who had the fastest time? That's probably the guy the Raiders are going to target. So I don't know that really exists necessarily, but you know, it's hard to teach speed, and that is
I think it gets used as a tiebreaker though, right? Yeah. And I do think that it can change somebody from being a second round pick to being a first round pick, you know, because then there's a little more projecting going on. It's like, hey, they didn't do it in college, but if we can harness that speed and unleash it, maybe we get that uncapped potential that wasn't realized yet in college. I think, but to your point, I don't think you have teams just going straight down like combine drills. Although if you're on Twitter during combine weekend, it's pretty hilarious the things people will do. The last running back to post these three scores in these three categories, and it's like some like Hall of Famer, and you're right. Like, okay, guys, like, come on,
like what are we doing?
Let's expand the sample a little bit, and like you said, you're gonna find a bunch of junk in there too, right? Yeah. So I think it's fine. It's a good thing. Just don't overweight it would be my advice to people.
100%. No, I completely agree with that. But that being said, let's dive into some of the guys who may have helped themselves out with what they did over the weekend in Indianapolis, starting with Brian Thomas Jr. When we have been talking LSU receivers in this draft, it has generally been Malik Nabers. He didn't work out over the past weekend. Brian Thomas had a very good weekend. What did you take away from what you saw from him?
Yeah, I think with Brian Thomas Jr., it's hard to argue that anyone improved their draft stock more than this guy did. He was thought to maybe be a borderline, you know, round one pick, but definitely like more of a round two guy. But after what he did this weekend, Marcus, 4.33, 40-yard dash. He had a 38.5 vertical jump, which is great. Like 40 is elite. And then he had a 10 foot, 6 inch broad jump, which like 120 is good. 125 is really good. So he's over that 126 inches. So I think he hit all the boxes. Also 6'3", 209 pounds. So he also has that size. And he's a guy that went to a good program at LSU. He had strong accolades, you know, coming out of college as well. Like it's a guy that also was pretty productive. Right. So it wasn't hyper productive, but pretty productive. Like when you look at his production score over on NFL.com and you can see it was a 79, then his athleticism score is a 92, which ranks third in the 2024 combine. So, yeah, I think when you look at Brian Thomas Jr., you're going to see people that already liked what he was probably putting on film. And now this being the tiebreaker, you add this on top and you look at that. What we talked about, the speed score being the most important thing. And typically, if you get over 115, that's been a good thing. Even for guys, if you're discounting where they were drafted, and it's not perfect, but if you go back and you look at a lot of the hits that have come from athleticism, it's been tied to that speed score. And he got to a score of 118.9, which again, you're combining his weight as well as his 40 times. So I do think that Brian Thomas Jr. is a guy that more than anyone else improved his stock.
And you talk about wide receivers from LSU. Recent years, they've had a very good track record. You look at Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson, Odell Beckham, just to name a few guys who came out of that school and have so far had very productive NFL careers. So Brian Thomas, actually a very, very good weekend. We'll see where he lands because of that. Next up, Adonai Mitchell, University of Texas. He was a guy, kind of another big body guy who can get downfield, maybe get up and win some jump balls. There was some thought that maybe the Buccaneers would have some interest in him. I imagine that has gone away now that they have brought back Mike Evans. But nonetheless, I would think after what happened this weekend, a lot of folks very interested in Adonai Mitchell.
Yeah, and you know, we'll talk about Xavier Worthy too. These guys are both from Texas. But I think Mitchell's the one that probably improved his draft stock the most. Worthy may have locked himself into round one, which is going to ultimately equal more money. When you look at Mitchell and the range of where he could have gone in the draft, this might move him into that round two territory. You know, we'll see what the new mocks start to look at. I started looking at some today, but we just haven't had enough time for that to settle. So I'm waiting on Grinding the Mocks to give us their next update now that we've had the combine. So it should be coming in the next week or so. But I do think that Mitchell will be a guy that will jump up a lot. And if you look at it again, it really comes down to that speed score. He was the only other wide receiver, Marcus, to get over that 115 mark. So he weighed in at 205 pounds, 6'2". And then he ran that 4.34 40. Like that's blazing. I know we discount the speed, but I mean, there were so many guys. I don't remember a combine with this many guys. I haven't gone back to look yet, but I don't remember it a combine with this many guys in the 4.3s. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, 4.3 used to be like, you get a couple of guys do that. We had several do it this year and guys that also have that size. So I do think that Mitchell definitely improved his draft stock with this. And we'll see where he lands. But again, draft capital, if you can be a round two or round three pick, maybe you won't be a round one pick, but round two and round three picks get a lot more latitude than round four, five, and six.
100%. Yeah. And I don't know where I saw it, but I think somebody tweeted, and this is very unofficial, that this might have been the fastest group of wide receivers we've ever seen at the combine.
I wouldn't doubt
it. Average.
Yeah. I'm with you. I have not checked that, but right. Just like, off the top of my head, because I'm looking at this stuff every single year, I would not doubt it if it is the fastest.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a blazing group of guys, including the aforementioned Xavier Worthy, who obviously his 40 time was the headline performance of what he did. I mean, we've talked about the fact that he has moved himself up. I feel like this is one, though, Dwayne, where I think a lot of people may go back to the game film now and just sort of see, you know, does that straight line speed match up to that play speed? What else does he bring for fear of getting sort of caught in that speed trap, pun intended there?
Yeah, nobody likes a speed trap, Mark.
Nobody does.
Money, whether it's running through a podunk town and getting a ticket or drafting capital that you shouldn't and a guy right. Fast. It will cost you money. But I mean, look, this is a hyper athlete. Like the guy, you know, his broad jump was great. His vertical was 41. He's 5'11", 165, though. So even though he ran that 4.21, his speed score is a 105, well below what we saw from Brian Thomas Jr. at 118.9 and Adonai Mitchell at 115.6, his teammate from Texas. And that's going to be a bit of a red flag for teams. Now, having said that, I do feel like we're moving into an age, Marcus, where we're seeing, you know, a little bit more leeway for these small guys to get more runway, if you will, with these new coaching staffs that are now more willing to, hey, try to get them the ball in space around the line of scrimmage and really play to their strengths. We didn't always see that back in the day. You know, 10 years ago, for sure 15, 20 years ago, even 5 years ago, but 10 years ago, like if you weighed this much, you had no chance of going in the first round. Like you weren't as a wide receiver. Now teams are at least open to it. And they're willing to consider what are the ways we can unlock this player. And I think seeing what Tank Dell did last year, even though he wasn't a great 40 time, but a smaller player as a rookie, you know how recency bias works, Marcus.
Right.
I saw it all. I've already seen it all over Xavier Worthy, people immediately citing Tank Dell. But it's not just Tank Dell. We've seen multiple. Tutu Atwell was off to a hot start at the beginning of last year. He got a little bit dinged up. Devonta Smith is a guy, you know, that came in and did not have that great BMI profile and has played really well with the Eagles. So I think that seeing some of these recent receivers that don't necessarily weigh 200, 210, 215 pounds coming out and being able to do this, I think it does open the door for guys like Worthy. And I think it will mean a first round pick for him. I think at the worst, he's going at the top of the second round. He seems like a guy that if he slips out of the first round, someone will be there on day two to move up, right? And go get him and say, hey, we know how to unlock this guy. And there are keys to doing this. You get him in motion. You keep him off the line of scrimmage. There are ways you can get the ball to these really fast playmakers without making them run a full route tree. The question is, can they then hold up to the hits, right? Because when you're getting these catches around the line of scrimmage and you're spreading things out, you know, you've got these linebackers that are way faster, safeties coming downhill, and you're taking a lot of hits when you're catching the ball underneath. That's why a lot of times possession receivers, you know, they're not just small little quick guys out of the slot. You'll see guys like Michael Thomas, right? Cooper Kupp's even a little bit bigger frame. A lot of these guys that catch a ton of balls underneath, they are still bigger. So I think it's a situation where the speed score, it comes in a little bit lower. I think you do have to discount him a little bit because of that smaller size. But I think the recent trend that we're seeing in the league, it could be a positive thing for Xavier Worthy, getting that door open for him.
Yeah, no, I think for sure. And I'm very curious to see who is interested in him and where he goes. I mean, we talked about a draft capital landing spot means so much. And he very well may have changed his landing spot by what he did this past weekend. Last one here, Rome Odunze, University of Washington. He's considered one of the top three wide receivers in this group. Of those top three, he was the one who did work out. And I think people were expecting him to put on a show, Dwayne. I feel like he did not disappoint.
Yeah.
I don't know that it was enough necessarily to move up. I feel like, you know, the top three are maybe sort of interchangeable in a lot of ways. So I don't know necessarily how much he moved up, but I think he sort of confirmed to everybody how good he is.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect way of putting it. He confirmed it, right? He cemented the fact that he should go right in that same range, whether you're talking about with Malik Nabers or Marvin Harrison Jr. They'll probably come off the board ahead of him, but he should go right behind those two guys. Ran that 4.45 40 at 212 pounds. He had a speed score of 108.1. Also flashed agility, 6.88 in the three cone. That's something that you'll see quite often from that slot archetype receiver. So maybe a guy that you can really work all over the field. And that's the thing you have to ask yourself about these combine drills. And that's why it's so funny. You have to think, okay, what does the position require, right, of a player? Okay, so we're talking about a wide receiver. What position do they play? On the inside? Do they play on the outside? Are they having to stretch the vertical boundary? Are they going to be, asked to do more? Are they going to be asked more to separate via quickness in short areas and space? And that's where things like the three cone, I have seen, not a ton of signal in it overall, but if you start archetyping wide receivers and guys that work inside, I have seen some examples of where that three cone has been something that, maybe is a little bit of an indicator. Again, not trying to overdo it, but he really graded out good in all the explosive categories, but also in the quickness. So I think, yeah, he's for sure locked himself into that. I doubt he falls outside the top 15 in the first round. That kind of feels like his floor at this point, and it seems like he could go as high as, like the top 7 or 8.
I mean, for what it's worth, Daniel Jeremiah's comp for Rome Odunze was Larry Fitzgerald. And knowing
a guy that worked inside.
And look, knowing DJ, I know he is not prone to hyperbole. I think he makes that comparison very cautiously, but he really does like what he's seen out of Odunze, and that is a high bar to try and measure up to. But certainly the start of his journey has looked very, very good so far for him.
That's hey, also what's up, buddy Lance Zierlein. That's also his comp, Larry Fitzgerald. Yeah. So two for two.
And look, Lance is another one who I know. Lance, look, I know for a fact Lance watches like 500 prospects.
He's grinding.
I have in the past had to edit some of them, some of the copy. I will tell you that when you are editing copy on like college punters and kickers, you sort of evaluate your life choices at that point, you know. And I love Lance. It's all really well written, really, really well researched. But when you're reading a draft profile on a punter, you know, you really think about what's going on. So that's
hey, just me. He had to write the damn thing. You just had to.
Very good. That's true. Fair point. 100% fair. Totally. Hey, all right. What's up, basketball fans? The season is starting to heat up with bigger plays and even bigger wins. Today, we've teamed up with DraftKings, who have a brand new way to play daily fantasy sports. With DraftKings Pick 6, all new customers get a 100% deposit match up to $100 in Pick 6 credits when you deposit just $5 or more. Get in on the action right now. Getting started is simple. Download the DraftKings Pick 6 app and sign up using the code DEBRIEF. The crown is yours. Now, getting started is simple. Download the DraftKings Pick 6 app. Sign up using promo code DEBRIEF. Select 2 to 6 players for basketball and choose if they're going to have more or less of a certain stat. You can track your lineup and compete against others for a shot at huge cash prizes. So jump on in. The NBA regular season starting to hit the final stretch. Chance you to jump in now and enjoy the rest of it. All right, back to our combine look. We'll dive into the running backs, which is sort of an interesting group. And I know we talked about it a little bit last week, that we talked about free agent running backs, that it sort of speaks to something that Jonathan Brooks right now, who's coming off an ACL tear, is the top running back considered in this class. But there were some guys that certainly helped themselves out. First off, Isaac Garrido, who was a name that I don't think a lot of people were talking about before the weekend, but I think he's a name that a lot more people are paying attention to after the weekend, Dwayne.
Yeah, I won't be surprised if he improved his draft stock more than anyone when we see the new mock draft start coming in, because what you mentioned, like, he was a bit of an unknown factor for a lot of people, you know, and I'm just now getting into all my prospect work. Honestly, I didn't know a lot about him. Like, yeah. And when I saw these combine numbers, I was like, okay, yeah, I'm going to have to know about him because everybody's going to be going crazy. But I mean, we're talking about a player, you know, Marcus, that weighs 221 pounds and comes out and runs a 4.3340. So obviously that's really good for his speed score. We talked about 115 being good. That's a 125.7 speed score. This guy, if you guys haven't checked out Kent Lee Platt, he does something called the relative athletic score, and you can go over to his website, rasfootball.com. I love it because it goes all the way back to 1987. And of all the running backs that have been in the combine since 1987, Marcus, Isaac Garrido ranks number 5 in his relative athletic score. Wow. So that's a really high score. It's 9.98. Justin Fargus was number 1. Edgerrin James, number 2. Jackie Battle, number 3. James Stewart, remember James Stewart, Tennessee, number 4. Then you get Isaac Garrido, and then you get Deuce McAllister, Saquon Barkley, Breece Hall. So some good names. But then, like you mentioned, Marcus, also a bunch of names you don't know, just barely behind those guys: Ryan McCants, Michael Cox, Chris Darkins, Darius Jackson, Chris Henry. Stop me whenever you maybe remember if any of these guys were productive in the league. So again, going back to how there's not a ton of signal here, but some of the best running backs we've ever seen have definitely had these traits. Now, is Isaac Garrido going to be one of those? Yeah, I don't know. But at least it's a positive thing for him. It's definitely going to help his draft stock. We'll see what happens. But I think he did enough that you're going to find a team that's going to want to say, okay, we can bring this guy in. We fit him in our scheme. We get him into open space, and he can use that athleticism. He definitely made himself some money this last weekend. And depending on how high he goes, again, round 2 and 3 being the key. If he goes in like round 2 or 3, that would really help him a lot as far as the latitude he's going to get from whatever team he lands on, and they're going to be trying to get him on the field.
Yeah, so, I mean, we'll see how much he improved that stock, but definitely a good weekend for him. Also good weekend for Trey Benson. Yeah. And this is a guy, look, I think he was considered amongst the top 3 or 4 running backs in this class anyway, but did a lot to help himself. Look, let's just be honest, right? We're not going to see any running backs on day one. It may be, you know, maybe the latter part of day two when we start to see a lot of these guys come off the board, but I think Benson did enough to sort of lock himself into somewhere in that day two group.
I could see Benson passing Jonathan Brooks with this score. I think teams care enough about speed and knowing that he's going to be healthy, and they care about size, right? And the speed score tells us that if there is something that matters, is putting that speed, you got to get the weight going with the speed. So this is a guy that's 6 foot, weighs 216 pounds. That's really good. You know, went to Florida State, a good program, pretty productive, not elite production in college, but pretty productive. His production score, according to Next Gen, ranks sixth out of all the running backs in this class. And then his athleticism score was the third. I mean, 4.39 40, 1.52 split, and then, you know, broad jump of 122 inches. So 10 foot, 2 inches. So when you look at his speed score, he's one of the other guys, Marcus, that got over that 115. There were only two running backs to do it. Isaac Grindo, who already talked about, and Trey Benson is the next one. And this is a guy that, unlike Grindo, was a little more productive, right? In college, comes from a bigger program. So I would not doubt if Trey Benson got himself a probably locked into a second round pick, you know, with this performance. I think he could easily pass Jonathan Brooks, just because I think you'd see teams use it as a tiebreaker, right? That they're just worried about, okay, there is a little bit of uncertainty. Most players recover from these injuries nowadays. Like, medicine is so much better, but it's just one little red flag that they're not going to have to worry about. Trey Benson's not coming off of an injury like that.
Yeah. And you mentioned big body guy, 6 feet, 216. So not a small back either that you're talking about there. So definitely an interesting spot for him. We'll see where he ends up going. Probably, as you mentioned, day two, second round potentially for him. Jalen Wright, again, another name that is considered amongst the top two or three guys in this class. I think some people have him right behind Jonathan Brooks, although that could be shifting depending on, you know, Brooks's medicals and kind of whatever happened this weekend. So, I mean, your thoughts on what you saw from Jalen Wright.
Yeah, so Jalen Wright, like, definitely another guy that came out, you know, and did everything that he needed to do to really improve, you know, the way that teams are going to look at him. Not quite as big, you know, as Trey Benson, but, like, still, you know, I mean, this is a guy that you're looking at him at 210 pounds, a little bit shorter. So his BMI is actually, which I haven't looked at, it's probably going to even be a little bit better than Trey Benson, but his 40 time is 4.38. So that's a speed score of 114.1. And again, guys, none of these things matter a ton, but if we're going to pick one thing, the speed score is the best thing to look at. And so he was just below that 115 threshold. So I do think that this is a guy that, man, if he lands in the second or third round of the draft, we're going to be pretty excited about him. Lance Zierlein gave him a comp of Melvin Gordon, which, hey, Melvin Gordon is a guy that we really like. Yeah. He talks about some of his strengths, and we saw this at the combine. He's got that sprinter speed for long touchdown runs once he hits that open field. So his explosive run rate is really good. So teams are always looking for that, especially teams that, you know, run that zone type of scheme where that one cutback, you get to the back door and you hit that open lane, and your acceleration is really what's going to carry you past the linebackers, not necessarily having to make a move at the next level. You can, but if you can just make that, if you can use your acceleration just to take the angle away from the linebacker, like, that's the type of scheme. And I haven't broken him down yet as far as, like, how well he runs and gap schemes versus zone skis scheme. So, I mean, I could be wrong about that. Maybe he's a terrible zone runner, but just hits me off the cuff, like, when you think about guys that can do that really well. So, yeah, Jalen Wright definitely improved his draft stock. Wouldn't be surprised to see him go in round two or three after this performance for the young man out of Tennessee.
Yeah, and I think you hit on a thing that I think is going to be sort of consistent with a lot of these backs. I don't know that there are any guys in here that teams look at and say, hey, like, this is a guy that we think can come in and be the guy. It feels like a lot of these guys are complementary pieces sort of at the NFL, guys that may be a little bit more specialized in terms of what they do within a respective offense. And that includes Marshawn Lloyd, who is another guy who's right now sort of projected to be a top four or five back in this draft. He's a guy that personally I got to watch a lot this past year at USC. Explosive at times, maybe not as consistent as you like, although I also my own personal frustration that maybe he didn't get the ball as much as I would have liked to see during that season with Lincoln Riley there. But another guy who athletically performed really, really well, I saw that the Lance Zierlein's comp was Jerick McKinnon, which, you know, not terrible, a guy who certainly carved out a nice career, but a guy that, like I said, feels more like a complimentary piece than necessarily a guy who's eventually going to take over a backfield.
Yeah. So when you look at Lloyd, he did a nice job for himself in the combine like that. If you look at his speed score, didn't quite get to that 115, but 111.2. That's pretty good. You know, his relative athletic score was 9.29. That's also good. But I think some of the key questions come down to, you know, his production was decent, not great. And then you look like at the comp, like Jerick McKinnon. And if you look at, you know, even to your point, what you just mentioned about him, you know, that's really what Zierlein writes up. He talks about Lloyd flashes on tape. It could lead to a team to envision a more expansive role for him on offense, But based on his play, he feels more like a good complementary option with some big play potential. So I think, and I've also talked to Matt Waldman about Marshawn Lloyd, and I think there's some pretty mixed reviews. I don't want to speak for Matt. There are things he likes about Marshawn Lloyd, but wasn't like as enamored with him as some of the, you know, the scouting community that we're hearing from on Twitter about Lloyd. So he'll be a guy that I'm very interested to get into, you know, doing the rookie prospect analysis and getting the supermodel going around it. I will say the big thing here, you know, and I haven't looked at it really for any of these guys, it's the same stuff we talked about at running back when we did our free agent pod, Marcus. Mm-hmm. And we talked about, okay, like the number one differentiator for all these guys, even once we normalize for rushing attempts, it's their ability in the passing game. And that's the key. Are any of these backs, and I haven't studied that yet, what do they look like in the passing game? Are they guys that could truly come in at the next level? And to your point, take over that every down role, meaning they could play the 2-minute offense. They can play on third downs. And we don't want guys that are just, look, most running backs, this is what's funny. And this is where I think sometimes we get twisted on the wrong stuff whenever we start talking about running backs. Like I'll see people arguing about whether or not Kenneth Walker can catch the football. That's not the question. Most of these running backs can catch the football.
Right.
The question is, can they work downfield? Can they be mismatch players? Can they be like a Christian McCaffrey or an Alvin Kamara where they can get in space against a linebacker and do damage? Most of these backs, if the first read's gone, second read's gone, they can go to the flat and catch a swing pass. Almost all of them, right? So that's really not what we're looking for, guys. Like what we want to look for are the plus average depth of target guys that can be mismatches and they get huge target shares even in college. And we saw that, you know, on a targets per route run basis last year for Jahmyr Gibbs. So I haven't been able to get into that angle, but when I see a name like Jerick McKinnon, I haven't read everything about, you know, Lloyd, but what I did like about McKinnon is he's always had that receiving side of his game. Yeah. Right. So if that's something that Lloyd does have, well, then that would really change my opinion about him quite a bit, because that is the thing that, in my opinion, like outside of draft capital, we've got to pay attention to the most are which guys can also catch the ball really well that also weigh a decent amount. And that gives that opens the door to an every down type of role. And we know for running back, opportunity is everything.
100%. And I mean, when you talk about Jerick McKinnon, I mean, obviously he made a splash fantasy wise a couple of seasons ago with the Chiefs in their previous Super Bowl run. And as you mentioned, he's always sort of been that guy who could kind of play that role within a respective offense. So we'll see. You know, we'll go back. As Ian says, we're going to study the tape. We're going to get better. We're going to study the tape and see how these guys perform in a whole lot of different.
I have to say, I love these things, though. Scout speak always gets me. And so Lance, he has one of his weaknesses.
Oh yeah.
Lacks sand in his pants to protect his quarterback in the blitz pickup. Lance is the best. I love the way they write these things.
Lance is the best when it comes to scout speak. Like I should go through and like read them and just pull out some of the best
sand in his
phrases.
Pants.
Yeah. Cause you know, he is great. When it comes to sort of stuff, you know, I guess that helps though. When, you know, your dad is a NFL offensive line coach for years, I'm sure you learned a lot of these little, you know, scouting lingo phrases and that
I'm
sort
sure
of thing.
He did.
Yeah. Absolutely. We were going to try to talk some tight ends, but I think maybe we table that for next week. So we can kind of dive into it a little more length.
Because we have quite a few names to hear here. Let's save that one for next Tuesday.
Yeah.
So any other just stuff like for combine that you want to hit, Marcus?
No, I mean, I thought I saw the guys that I really wanted to see. I mean, I was curious personally about Marshawn Lloyd. I wanted to see some of the other receivers. You know, I thought, you know, there's some guys that I'm going to go back and watch, right? I started going back to watch Malachi Corley because he was a name that people were sort of talking about this past week. I want to check him out. I'm very curious at the rise of J.J. McCarthy because, you know, there's always one guy, and you know this, there's always one guy that shoots up draft boards that maybe at the start of draft season, people are sort of, you know, lukewarm on. And then by the time we get to April, everybody's sort of hot on. And it feels like J.J. McCarthy is that guy. Even going so far,
I think that's a really interesting one.
I saw him as the number one quarterback, which that blew me away a little bit.
Yeah, I think we're overthinking it if we're going to have him number one. That feels clickbaity to me. No offense to whoever wrote that. They may very legitimately have that take. But it's funny. I feel like Caleb Williams is the slam dunk number one. I don't understand what we're doing. But it's interesting because the position, we see this every year, and NFL teams aren't always in alignment with us, Marcus. Mm-hmm. So when I say alignment, fantasy community, draft nick community, you know, think about it. 2 years ago, what was the name that everybody swore? People were saying this quarterback could go number one overall. right? And it's back to Malik Willis.
Yeah. That's
completely right. Wrong. Right. And then what was it the following year? We had, I can't remember who it was. We had another quarterback shoot way up the board that didn't end up going in the first round. So people start thinking quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Teams need quarterbacks. There's always a shortage of quarterbacks. There's always teams that need one. We know that it's the most important position in the NFL. And I think those are the dots people start connecting. And then they're like, well, he could go as high as number 11. They need a quarterback. And he's got all this steam around him. So I really am interested to see what happens. And I'm not saying McCarthy is going to be Malik Willis. Right. But I pretty much feel like every year we have a quarterback that gets pushed way too far up the board that doesn't even go in the first round. Right. And it gets a lot of people. It gets some of the very best experts out there that cover this, that basically covering the draft is pretty much what they do for a living. And they can get sucked into this this vacuum, this vortex, right? That also can make them even think, oh, this guy has a good shot of going in the top 10. So McCarthy is that name this year. Yeah. Like, he's the guy. Do we really think he's better than, Penix? I haven't done all my work on these guys.
He's younger than Penix, and he has less of an injury history than Penix, and I think that sort of works in his favor. But
can he throw the football as good as Penix? Can he operate under pressure as good as, like, if I'm grading, and quarterbacks are so hard, but it all really comes down to, and it's not smart, it's reactions, right? It's the ability to process information quickly and then make the right decision. I would say that's the number one thing for quarterback, right? Yeah. That means dealing with pressure, dealing with disguised coverages. Those are things that you see quarterbacks coming from the college game struggle with the most when they get to the NFL, because they see more of those things. And the data tells us that that can be a big factor. So you've got to be able to have that processing speed. And then you don't have to have the best arm strength, but you have enough arm strength and accuracy that whatever weakness, whatever area of the field the defense decides, once you process everything, that this is what they're giving you, can you get to it? Right. Can you then make that throw once you've processed all the information and get it there accurately so that your wide receiver can do more with it? Right. Get the yards after the catch, all those sort of things. Because I think it's pretty funny. You know, we talk about, like, contested catch rates aren't typically good for guys coming out of college. But sometimes, like, you go watch their quarterback they played with, Marcus, and you're like, well, what's he supposed to do? Like, the guy threw it 2 seconds late into double coverage. You know, he was open early in the route, but the processing time wasn't there for that quarterback. He still had the arm strength to get it there, but by then it was double coverage. So it's just, man, quarterback is so many layers. I'm not pretending to have the magic bullet. There are people out there that are better at grading quarterbacks than me. I think it's just really tough. And so I am very interested to see what shakes out with these guys.
100%. It's funny too, talking to Matt Harmon all the time, and he, doing obviously so much work with reception perception. One of the things he has said to me is that because he spends so much time watching wide receivers, by default, he ends up watching a lot of quarterbacks too. And, he's like, on some levels, there's just really poor quarterback play, and that, he has
and
to sort
dude,
of.
Dude, there's a lot of it in college.
Yeah.
A lot of it. In the NFL, we accept there's going to be 4 to 6 on a given year, right? Mm-hmm. And usually even 3 of those can be serviceable enough to get the ball to the receiver, but we have like 3 that are terrible. Like, right. When you go look at college, I know these guys are better than they were in high school because they made it to college football. Like, they're better than I am at playing quarterback. But when you can watch it, there's a lot of bad quarterback play.
And I know that's a thing that Matt has said he sort of has to take into account, especially when he's charting college players, the level of quarterback play, the accuracy of throws and that sort of thing. So we'll find out. I mean, we're going to watch, guys. I'm with you. I think Caleb's the number one pick. I think the question is, who's number two? Is it Drake May? Is it Jaden Daniels? Does somebody else, does McCarthy sneak into there and become, a number 2 or 3 quarterback in this draft? We will find out. Still a lot of time to go between now and the draft. I know we'll have pro days. I know there will be random videos that pop up on Twitter that get everybody all hot and bothered. And we'll probably talk about those as well, too, because it happens every year. Look, I still remember the time Zach Wilson broke the internet for a couple of days with the throw he made at pro day. And then, here we are a few years later.
There's something I'm out on even more than the combine. It's pro day.
The pro day throw.
It's the throwing against air at a pro day.
Hey, man. Johnny Manziel threw against the broom, right? Remember that? Everybody got really excited. Like, there's a guy like waving a big
to
broom.
To see that he can actually get it over. Yes. Is he tall enough to throw past defensive linemen? Get the broom out.
It's funny. Like, cause Manziel throws against the broom. I remember when Jared Goff had his pro day. It just so happened to be raining in Berkeley that day. And the big question was, can he play in bad weather? And they got like a little bit of a drizzle in Berkeley, and everybody's like, okay, it's fine now. I'm like, sure. You know, whatever. Yeah.
Small hands on the rain. Can he do it?
Right. It's just not going to work out. I mean, you know, whatever. He just helped the team get to the NFC Championship game this year, but no big deal. He's been to a Super Bowl at some point in his life. So, you know, no big deal at all. Anyway, we still got plenty more to talk about in the weeks to come. We will dive into tight end free agency next week. In fact, the free agent market will be alive and kicking by the time I think we come around next week, but we'll start to dive into some of that as well. So we appreciate you hanging out with us as always. As Dwayne mentioned at the top of the show, if you have not signed up for the newsletter, please go do that. Go to fantasylife.com. You can sign up for the low, low price of free, and you get all sorts of interesting and fun things in your inbox every single day. But in the meantime, that will do it for this edition of the Utilization Report Debrief. We appreciate you hanging out with us. Thanks to James Lynch for putting this thing together for us. For Dwayne McFarland, I am Marcus Grant. Enjoy the week. Enjoy all your amateur scouting out there as well. And we will talk to you again real soon.